MyAudiobooks.ai presents The Quiet Delisting, How the Last Big Renewable Producer Left the Public Market. The best auction is the one nobody knows is happening. On the afternoon of Monday, March 23rd, 2026, the secret got out. The first media report that Borealex, Canada's flagship independent renewable power producer, was reviewing its strategic alternatives hit the wires. And the market surveillance team at the Canadian Investment Regulatory Organization came calling. Inside Borealex's Montreal headquarters, a leak response protocol drafted 7 months earlier, before the auction even formally began, was activated. The company confirmed the review that same afternoon. Then it did something stranger. It finished the auction. Within roughly 36 hours, in the early morning of March 25th, Borealex signed a definitive agreement to sell itself for $37.25 a share in cash, a 31.8% premium to the undisturbed price, an enterprise value of $9 billion, to an entity called BIF Thunder Holdings Incorporated, jointly owned by Brookfield's flagship infrastructure fund and La Caisse de dépôt et placement du Québec. By August 14th, the money was in the depository's account. By August 17th, the stock was gone. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to deep dive investigations like this one. Plus, create your own audiobooks from prompts and documents with a single subscription. We read the deal the way it was actually written, the arrangement agreement and the management information circular filed on SEDAR+. The formal valuation and three fairness opinions appended to it, and the five press releases that marked the march from signing to closing. What they describe is not a distress sale or a boardroom coup. It is a 7-month, 3-stage, 17 confidentiality agreement auction that extracted three successive price increases out of the world's largest infrastructure fund, and a case study in why the public market has stopped working for the companies building the energy transition.
Section 1. The deal.
Start with the terms, because they are unusually clean. Every Borealex Class A common share, roughly 103 million of them on a fully diluted basis, converts into $37.25 in cash. That is a 31.8% premium to the $28.26 close on March 20th, the last full trading day before the leak, and a 36.4% premium to the 30-day volume-weighted average price. It is 13.2% above the stock's 52-week high, and it exceeds every closing price Borealex had printed since June of 2023. The equity check is about $3.8 billion. The enterprise value is roughly $9 billion, including debt, or, measured against this year's expected cash earnings, about 13 times. The structure is a statutory plan of arrangement under the Canada Business Corporations Act, the Canadian Take Private Workhorse, court-supervised from the start. It required 2/3 of votes cast, plus a majority of the minority, excluding La Caisse, whose 15% stake made it a related party under the minority protection rules. There was no financing condition. The buyers delivered equity commitment letters at signing for $5.78 billion, $4.6 from Brookfield's infrastructure funds, $1.18 from La Caisse, with limited guarantees capped at $180.5 million. If Borealex had walked for a superior offer, it would have owed $115 million. If the buyers had failed to fund or fumbled the regulators, they would have owed $172 million. The timeline? Signed March 25th. Shareholders approved June 4th at 99.86%, 99.83% on the minority vote. Final court order from the Superior Court of Quebec on June 5th. All six regulatory approvals in hand August 6th. Closed August 14th. Delisted August 17th. 142 days, start to finish, a quarter ahead of schedule. Section 2. The company that outgrew the market. To understand why this deal happened, you have to understand what Borealex actually is, because its business model is the whole story. Boralex is a 35-year-old independent power producer. 107 wind farms, 13 solar sites, 15 hydroelectric stations, and 4 battery facilities. 3,783 megawatts net, split roughly 60-40 between North America and Europe. It is the largest independent onshore wind producer in France, which almost nobody outside the sector knows. Over 90% of its output is sold under long-term contracts averaging 10 years, indexed fixed-price agreements or feed-in premiums with floor prices, which means its revenue behaves less like a company's and more like a bond portfolio's. It employs 868 people, and it was, by the sector's own logic, a success. Installed capacity up more than 50% in 5 years, a development pipeline of 8.2 gigawatts, more than double its entire operating base, with a strategic plan calling for $6.8 billion of investment through 2030, and another $1.2 billion for projects beyond it. Here is the trap, and it is the trap the entire sector is in. Contracted renewable assets are infrastructure, capital hungry to build, annuity-like ones operating. The public market prices them like orphan equities, too boring for growth investors, too levered and weather-exposed for value investors. And when interest rates rose, the sector derated hard. Boralex's stock fell from $33 in mid-2025 to under $24 by December, a slide of nearly 30%, while the assets kept generating the same contracted cash. At $25 a share, Boralex's whole equity was worth barely $2.6 billion, against a $6.8 billion construction program. A public company in that position cannot issue stock without destroying its own shareholders. You are selling pieces of the enterprise at 6x cash flow to build assets that private buyers will later price at 12. The board said it plainly in the circular. The review was triggered by a collapsing public valuation, a rising cost of capital, a wave of sector privatizations, and the growing risk of activists and unsolicited approaches. The machine that was supposed to fund the energy transition had become the obstacle to it. Section 3. The auction. The circular's background section is the document nobody reads, and it is a masterclass in how to run a sale. In March of 2025, the board formed a special committee of independent directors, chaired first by Alain Rayom, then by André Courville, and authorized a quiet market sounding. The financial advisors approached 6 prospective counterparties, using only public information, with management deliberately excluded. By September 11th, the board approved a formal confidential sale process, and on September 12th, Courville, Chief Executive Patrick DeCostra, and the interim finance chief flew Lacasse in under a non-disclosure and standstill agreement, because you do not run an auction for a Quebec champion without telling the 15% shareholder that anchors it. Then the machinery. 22 financial and strategic parties contacted, 17 confidentiality and standstill agreements signed, a data room, a quality of earnings report from KPMG, and a November 18th deadline. 9 indications of interest came back, 8 all cash, including Brookfield's opening bid of $36 even, and 1 all-share offer from a strategic player the circular calls only Party C. 2 more offers, for minority stakes or pieces of the business, were thrown out as non-conforming. The 4 highest bidders advanced: Brookfield, Party A, a consortium of 2 financial sponsors, Party B, another sponsor, and Party C. In February, after management presentations and full diligence, 3 of the 4 raised their bids. Brookfield went to $36.50, fully financed. Party C could only stretch to 25% cash. Party B did not move. What happened next is the part that usually stays in the data room. Party A demanded exclusivity twice and was refused twice because the committee would not surrender its only leverage, competition. On March 5th, Party A walked, its last bid already below Brookfield's. Party C resubmitted uninvited with an exchange ratio collar, but it could not fund more cash without a vote of its own shareholders, and it could not prove those shareholders would support the deal, an execution risk the committee weighed and rejected. On March 13th, Brookfield submitted its third proposal, 3725, fully financed, diligence complete, valid for acceptance until 5 o'clock on March 16th, conditioned on a 5-day exclusivity period. The board extracted its own price for that exclusivity, the termination fee triggers, the regulatory efforts covenant, the equity commitment, and a completed agreement between Brookfield and LaCaisse, and signed the exclusivity letter on March 17th. 5 days later, the leak hit, and 40 hours after that, the deal was done. The auction's final arithmetic, three bids from Brookfield, each higher than the last, totaling $1.25 a share, roughly $128 million, extracted after the process supposedly had its best offer. Section 4. The valuation and the conflicts. Every Canadian take private of this kind comes with a formal valuation, and Desjardins is worth reading because of what it reveals about how private capital prices these assets. The discounted cash flow model runs from 2026 to the year 2124. Not a typo, a 98-year forecast, because hydroelectric stations outlive the analysts who model them. The discount rate is 6.3 to 6.4%, built from a 50-50 target capital structure, a 4% risk-free rate, and a 1% size premium. There is no terminal value. The model assumes each asset's residual value is consumed by the cost of tearing it down. And most telling of all, Desjardins cut the net present value of Boralex's entire 8-gigawatt development pipeline in half, on the view that this is what a prudent buyer would actually pay for projects that exist mostly on paper. Public investors were being asked to believe in the pipeline. The private buyer paid for the steel in the ground. The result? Enterprise value of $9.2 to $9.8 billion, less net debt and other liabilities of $5.9 billion, including $434 million of leases and $449 million of non-controlling interests, for an equity range of $32.64 to $38.57 a share, rounded to a formal range of $33 to $38. The $37.25 consideration lands at the 85th percentile. The precedent table underneath it reads like a roll call of the sector's disappearance. Innergex to LaCaisse at 11.8 times cash earnings and a 58% premium. Neoen to Brookfield and Temasek at 12.5 times, and Cavis to KKR at 12.5. Pattern Energy to the Canada Pension Plan at 13.5. Boralex's 13 times is not an outlier. It is the going rate for getting out. One disclosure deserves to be read with both eyes open, and we say that as analysis of a completed transaction, not as investment advice. The fairness opinions came from National Bank and RBC, and RBC's own appendix discloses that in the prior 2 years, it ran 36 debt offerings for Brookfield entities worth $36 billion, 12 loan facilities worth $27 billion, and 10 strategic advisory mandates worth $18. After signing, both banks got board consent for their affiliates to lend to the purchaser. This is legal, disclosed, and normal. And it is also why the independent valuator, Desjardins, was paid a fixed fee with no success component, and why the minority vote excluded LaCaisse's shares entirely. The insiders, meanwhile, did fine in the open. Chief Executive DeCostre's disclosed proceeds and deal payments total roughly $10 million, including a $1.4 million transaction bonus and a $2.8 million retention bonus. Across the executive suite, the circulars tables disclose roughly $9 million in such deal payments in all, on top of what their shares and options were cashed out for. All disclosed. All blessed by the special committee under the 1% exemption. The premium paid for everything. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden mechanics behind the headlines. Section 5. The case knot and the six stamps. Mao considered the strangest position in the deal. Lacaisse was simultaneously the largest seller and a buyer. It cashed out its 15.7 million shares at $37.25 like everyone else, and then subscribed for 30% of the purchaser. Under the minority protection instrument, that made it a related party, a joint actor with the purchaser, and a party to a connected transaction all at once, which is why its shares were excluded from the minority vote, and why the formal valuation was mandatory. The circular is careful to call the structure what it is, and the structure is elegant. The pension fund converted a passive, illiquid, publicly marked minority stake into a governed 30% position in the same assets at the same price, crystallizing a 32% premium on the way out and keeping the upside on the way back in. Brookfield's funds wrote the $4.6 billion check and took 70%. Lacaisse wrote $1.18 billion and kept the home office. The investment agreement hardwires the commitments Quebec cares about. Headquarters in Montreal, stakeholder and First Nations relationships intact, employee compensation and benefits protected for 24 months. The regulatory path was a six-front war fought in 4 months. Canada's Competition Act, the American Hart-Scott-Rodino filing made April 9th, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's Section 203 approval for the U.S. utilities, French foreign investment clearance, because energy supply is a covered activity and both buyers are foreign to France, the U.K.'s National Security and Investment Act, and the French Competition Authority. All six cleared by August 6th, with no disclosed remedies, though the agreement's efforts clause had teeth. Brookfield was bound to offer divestitures of Boralex assets if required, up to but not including anything touching its own or Lacaisse's affiliates, the carve-out lawyers call an affiliate burdensome condition. And while the regulators worked, Boralex kept building. On June 30th, between the court order and the closing, it closed a 1.45 billion euro platform financing in France, its largest ever, with a 22-year construction facility, alongside its French co-shareholder, Energy Infrastructure Partners. The market took that as the deal's quiet underwriting. The lenders never flinched. Section 6. What to look for next? The first signal is the recycling program. Brookfield's playbook, articulated in the announcement itself, pairs development with disciplined asset sales, harvesting mature assets to fund the next ones. Watch for Boralex's first divestitures, likely in France or the U.S. Northeast, within 18 months. The pace and pricing will tell you whether the $9 billion underwriting was conservative. The second is construction cadence. 311 megawatts commissioning across 2026 to 2028, then the 8.2 gigawatt pipeline that public investors stopped believing in. If Brookfield accelerates it, the thesis that private capital funds transitions better than public markets gets its strongest proof point yet. The third is the Innergex adjacency. Lacaisse now owns Quebec's other renewable champion outright, and 30% of this one. And while both sides insist there is no merger, watch for shared procurement and services, the quiet consolidation that needs no headline. The fourth is the emptying bench. Northland Power and TransAlta are nearly all that is left of the Canadian-listed renewable sector, and every board in the sector has now read the same 13 times cash flow clearing price. The fifth is the exit. Whether Boralex resurfaces inside Brookfield Renewable Partners, which already holds an 18% economic interest in the deal, returns to the exchange in a decade, or stays private for a generation. Brookfield's own history says assets this good rarely stay buried forever. Section 7. The broader pattern, an open question. The broad pattern is the quiet delisting of the energy transition. In 7 years, Pattern Energy, Neoen, Encavis, Atlantica, Innergex, and now Boralex, essentially the entire investable class of listed independent renewable producers, have left the public markets, every one of them bought by pension and infrastructure capital at premiums of 15 to more than 60%. The reason is not failure.
It is a mismatch. These companies pair bond-like cash flows with equity market funding costs. And when those costs inverted, the listings became unsustainable. The market would not fund the build-out at any price the existing shareholders could accept. As our earlier research on private capital's disclosure exemptions found, the marginal institution now prefers the letterbox to the exchange.
The exchange is becoming the residue of the unbuyable. And the energy transition, the largest construction program in economic history, is being financed increasingly where the public cannot watch it happen.
There is a second pattern, and it is distinctly Québécois. Twice in 18 months, La Caisse has moved its province's renewable champions off the exchange and into domestic pension hands, paying full premiums, keeping the headquarters, and converting speculative minority stakes into governed ownership. It is the old Quebec Inc. doctrine rebuilt for the energy transition. The national champions stay home, financed by the savings of the people who live under the transmission lines. Whether that is stewardship or shelter depends on what the new owners build.
Which leaves the open question, when the wind farms are all in pension hands, valued quarterly in private by the funds that own them, who prices the energy transition and who gets to own it? The auction was impeccable. The premium was real. The document trail is 98 years long. And the stock that used to answer that question every day at 4 o'clock no longer exists, which is either the market working exactly as intended or the market quietly admitting it no longer can. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai.
This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.